Reaching Attitudes, and we've been doing the fourth one, that of Enthusiastic Perseverance, or Joyous Effort is another translation. So this is the attitude that takes joy, or it takes delight in doing what is constructive, or wholesome, or positive. And so it's the, there's three, we already talked about this, I'm kind of reviewing, there's three kinds of joyous effort. One is armor-like. And this is when we take the challenge of working for sentient beings, the challenge of practicing the path, the challenge of remaining in samsara in order to have contact and benefit sentient beings. When we take all of that with a sense of joy and happiness, that's the armor-like joyous effort. And then the second kind is the joyous effort of acting constructively. So again, taking joy, putting effort, and really, discriminating well what to practice, what to abandon, and then actively practicing it. And then the third kind of joyous effort is the joyous effort of helping sentient beings. And so here again, we have that whole list of sentient beings, like when we talked about ethics. Remember that? Remember?
No.
That whole list of kinds of sentient beings to help, the poor, the sick and needy, those who are bereaved, those who are distressed, those who can't discriminate between what to practice and what to abandon, those who have been kind to us. Remember that list? Yeah? Okay, so the kind of joyous effort is the joyous effort in doing that. Okay? So really taking joy when there's an opportunity to help somebody instead of, oh, God, you mean I have to do something? So instead of that attitude, when hearing that somebody needs help or somebody that wants something, then we have a sense of joy and buoyancy and we want to go out and do it. Okay, so you can really see the difference here. Yeah. And then joyous effort is the antidote to laziness. And laziness is the obstacle to joyous effort. So we talked about three kinds of laziness. One was our ordinary Western conception of laziness, hanging out, sleeping, snoozing, lying on the beach, that kind of laziness in which we, what I call it is the manana mentality. Okay, Dharma practice is manana, okay? Daily practice, I'll do that tomorrow. We say that every day. Okay? Read a Dharma book, I'll do it tomorrow. We say that every day. Go on retreat, I'll do that next year. We say it every year. So that kind of laziness of procrastination, where we're just very attached to sleeping and dreaming and, being very laid back. Okay? Now, the second kind of laziness is what we usually think of as the antidote to the first kind of laziness, which is the laziness of being super busy. Okay? And we usually think of super busy being the antidote to the laziness of procrastination. But here, this, being super busy in a worldly way is another kind of laziness because we're still lazy in practicing the Dharma. Now, we're extremely busy, and our calendars are filled with stuff to do, and we go here, and we go there, and we're in this class, and we're in that club, and we're on this, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and we travel all these places and do all this stuff, but we don't practice Dharma, because we're too busy. And then, of course, the moment an evening comes free, we totally freak out because we don't know what to do with the free time, so we immediately call somebody up and fill it up. And then continue to complain about how we have no more time. Okay. So this is the second kind of laziness is the story of modern America. Okay. And it, like I said, it's called laziness because we don't practice. We keep ourselves extremely busy with everything but the Dharma. And so the antidotes for these two kinds of laziness, the first one, the laziness of procrastination, there we want to think about death and impermanence and recognize that death is certain, the time of death is uncertain, And so better not to procrastinate, because death could very well come before we practice the Dharma. And also for the second one, and actually both of these antidotes work for both of these types of laziness, but especially for the second one, here we contemplate the disadvantages of cyclic existence. Okay? So whereas the second laziness of being very busy in a worldly way is seeing all the advantages of cyclic existence. I can get a new house, I can get some more clothes, I can get some new sports equipment, I can go here, I can meet this fantastic person, I can get this promotion, I can be famous here and do this and that. Okay? So that kind of attitude sees cyclic existence as something like a pleasure ground. It's really fun. It's a playground. We can play and do all these things in it. And so the antidote to that is seeing the disadvantages of psychic existence. That, you know, no matter what we get, we're still not satisfied. That we work so hard to get stuff, and half the time we don't get it. You know, and if you look, so often that's really true. We work very hard to get things we're attached to. They're not at all definite. Sometimes we get them, then they don't meet our expectations, and even sometimes they bring more headaches. Okay, so really seeing, you know, that as it says in the foundation of all excellent, foundation of all good qualities, that the samsaric perfections are not to be trusted. Okay, because they aren't. They don't bring us lasting happiness. They aren't stable. They're not always there for us when we need them. And so recognizing this, and then seeing that the only real stability comes through, you know, the third noble truth, the truth of cessation, having removed the ignorance, anger, and attachment for our mind. And so because we want happiness, then, you know, we work for liberation in that way, because that's a stable kind of happiness. And so we really think of the disadvantages of cyclic existence. And that's extremely important, because without seeing the disadvantages of cyclic existence, it becomes very difficult to practice Dharma. In fact, virtually impossible. Because if we're not dissatisfied with cyclic existence, why try and get out of it? You know, if we think it's great, the way we're living our lives and being busy and doing all this stuff, then why practice the Dharma? You know, there's no sense to it. There's no purpose. Dharma is meant to be more than a hobby. Although sometimes in America, Dharma is very much a hobby. You do pottery on Monday night, and, you know, creative writing on Tuesday night, and, you know, swimming lessons at the Y on Wednesday night, and, you know, Thursday night you do Dharma, and Friday night you do, you know, something else. So it becomes like a hobby, something more to talk about at cocktail parties. All the... It was very fashionable in America to know Tibetans. You know, have a Tibetan stay at your house. Very fashionable. Fifth Avenue cocktail parties. You can really brag about it. Yeah. So Dharma becomes just you know, like a hobby. No real practice. It's just something that's trendy and, you know, for the in people. You know, I met Richard Gere at a Dharma party.